Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on our podcast, the Zoom where it happened. On a massive call over the weekend, about 100 of America's CEOs discussed Georgia's voting law, speaking up to political power and what's next. The man who organized the call, Yale's Jeff Sonnenfeld.
CEOs aren't doing this for grandiosity. You're right. They hate playing politician. They don't want to get involved. There's no middle ground anymore. Their silence means acquiescence. It means agreement. And they don't want that.
And planning for a vaccinated future, navigating shot verifications, and possibly fraud with Dr. Scott Gottlieb.
We've got these cards that people received when they got vaccinated. That's not going to be good enough. Those are available on eBay right now. People aren't going to accept the cards as proof of vaccination.
Those stories, Microsoft's big deal, the Fed chair's mainstream moment on 60 Minutes, records at the Masters, and all the rest of the news you can use, no matter your generation.
See, I can predate you on anything you talk. Did you see the moon landing?
Only on tape.
It's Monday, April 12th, 2021. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Good morning and welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin along with Joe Kern. Becky's off today.
What is the state of speech recognition? Siri is not stated. Maybe it's me. You know what I mean? Maybe I mumble, but she does not recognize.
No. You're about to talk about a huge deal. Tell everybody about what we're going to talk about. And then we can dig into it and we can enunciate and articulate our words.
I think it's me. Maybe it is. If it's not me, then Siri has serious problems when I dictate things because she comes up with stuff that no one would say. No one would ever say these things. And the most obvious thing that it seems obvious to me. I think I mumble. I think, you know, these people on Twitter are right. I mumble. I'm a mumbler. Let's start with the deal news. Sources telling CNBC Microsoft's in advanced talks to buy speech recognition company Nuance Communications. The deal could be announced as early as today. Microsoft said to be willing to pay about $56 a share for Nuance. That would be a 23% premium to Friday's closing price and the value of the deal at about $16 billion. It would be the second biggest purchase ever behind the $27 billion a dollar acquisition of LinkedIn back in 2016. How was that, Andrew?
I understood every word you said. I don't know if Siri would have picked it up.
I can
tell you that Nuance would have, because they were the originators of this entire space. They actually helped effectively create what you think of as Siri today. Nuance was related to that back in the day. Their Dragon service is off the charts. If you actually care about true dictation, especially in industries like medical dictation, where some of the words are even more complicated than words we would use,
right?
It picks it up. It's unbelievable. Many years ago, Joe, I had carpal tunnel in my hands because I was writing too much, and I was forced for about 6 weeks to use this Dragon software that Nuance made. This is probably now 10 or 15 years ago, and even back then, it was pretty extraordinary. And it wasn't just about the dictation. You could actually tell it where to put the mouse and what to click on the screen. I mean, everything. This is a huge thing.
What were you using? Do you have a bad typing technique, or were you using a BlackBerry, or how did you get carpal tunnel? You shouldn't get carpal tunnel if you're resting your hands properly or whatever.
I was not resting my hands properly was the point. Back in the day, two things. There used to be something called an ATEX system. For those of us in the newspaper business who really want to age yourself, then it was a keyboard and you really had to, you know, really jam on the keys. And then the other thing was I did have a laptop and I'd lie down. You should never do this. I'd lie on the couch, but I'd keep my hands up like this, type like this. And it can do a number on your...
Well, you don't go back to the IBM Selectric typewriter, do you? I go back to that. Well, at FNN, that's what we used. And we had, back then, you had to do six carbon sheets. You'd type out the script, rip them all off, bring one to Bill Griffith or Ron and Sana, get the other one into the booth, the other one here. Right. But every time you made a mistake, you could backspace it in the selector CAD, I think. But it wouldn't do it on the car. So I go back. I didn't have carpal tunnel syndrome. I just had stuff that looked like there were no words. They were just all... that was a wild... See, I can predate you on anything you talk... Did you see the moon landing live?
I have.
Did you? You
only,
didn't.
But only on that's tape.
Not a big deal, though. We landed on the moon, but seeing that was not a big deal for you. Let's move on here. Your carpal tunnel's gone. It's fixed. It's done. You're good.
For the most part, yes. Occasionally, I feel I don't use a mouse anymore.
You don't use a mouse. That causes
no
something?
Mouse.
That causes something, or you just
For me, it does. I use just like a trackpad.
Why does that
trackpad is better for me, and I don't, and I can't hit, and I can't do the click. So I have all my trackpads set, so it's just I just touch it. Otherwise,
really?
I start to feel it in my index and middle fingers.
I think this
on the
right
hand side.
I think this might be up here, Sorkin. I'm not sure.
Is there a way to capture what I think is going to be the interest, though, Joe, in golf during the Olympics this summer in Japan?
Okay, here's a prediction I heard yesterday.
Yeah.
Who's gonna light the torch? Who's gonna light the thing? Guaranteed. Hideki. Hideki will light he's got it. He will be worth $1 billion in Japan. Yesterday watching the Masters, you probably didn't see a lot of it, but
I did. I did.
You did? It's great. They kept switching to the coverage in Japan. And in fact, I think Tommy Nakajima, who used to play on the tour, was the color commentator. I couldn't understand what they were saying, but they got, you know, on number 15, I mean, Hideki is powerful, but on 15, he hit it a little too low. Did you see it go flying in? That's the hardest shot, and that was his second shot, but the third shot for me, when I have played, hardest shot in golf. The green's about this wide, this deep, and you're downhill, and it bounded it, but did you see how he just totally was calm and didn't try to get it up onto the green, got close, and then still got a bogey, and everything was fine. Poor Xander. Poor Xander had four straight birdies and then got to 16, and afterwards he said he flushed his tee shot on 16, but it still found the water. And that gave Hideki some breathing room to where he was able to have a couple of bogeys and still win by a stroke. Right. But this is major. This is big, big, big. And you know what? He's a man for the moment, Andrew. I mean, not for nothing, but great moment for this to happen. And he was the man to do it. And he deserved it.
Figure out how to put him on the squawk stack this morning.
Yeah, I don't know how we do that. He used to have a pause at the top that I used to watch, and I'm so fast that, and he's worked on that. He's still pretty slow at the top. But.
So you could put Toyota on there because he's got the big Lexus logo. That's one of his big sponsors. I don't know who else. That was the one that I noticed. Who else is on his sponsor list?
I didn't notice that beneficiary today. Yeah, but yeah, that was was awesome. You could have made some serious money if you picked Hideki on. Right. Thursday before the tournament started. I had Spieth. He was third. He's a grinder, isn't he?
The other thing that happened over the weekend, which is Fed Chairman Jay Powell saying it is, quote, highly unlikely that the central bank is going to be raising rates this year despite a stronger economy. Powell appeared on 60 Minutes last night. This is what he had to say.
Well, I'd say that we and a lot of private sector forecasters see strong growth and strong job creation starting right now. So really, the outlook has brightened substantially.
It seems like you're not expecting a recovery. You're expecting a boom.
Well, I would say that this growth that we're expecting in the second half of this year is going to be very strong.
Here's what he said about a digital dollar.
You've seen many other countries like ours, well-off countries like ours, that are looking at it seriously. In some of those countries, the use of cash has declined precipitously. That is not the case here. Americans still like to use cash. So it's something that'll be decided based on the situation here in the United States.
Joe, I didn't understand that answer.
I don't either.
I mean,
you
I understood the
cash.
Answer, but...
You use a lot of cash, Andrew?
I use next to no cash, but that's nor here nor there. What I didn't understand was that as
right.
I don't know if it was an excuse
a
or a
reason.
Rationale for not embracing either a digital dollar or digital money or crypto or whatever. That I could have come up with 100 reasons why if he didn't want to get involved with crypto or Bitcoin or this or that. But that would have not been on my list.
The comments that he and Secretary Yellen made in the last couple of weeks, I don't know when it was. I don't know. I didn't really understand those either, Andrew. I don't think there's a lot of, you know, we think these people know everything because they must, because they're in these positions. How much do they really know about Bitcoin? You think they've read any? Have they really looked? I don't know. I give them the benefit of the doubt. But from their comments, they don't seem like they may be that up to speed on things. I think I'm worried. Maybe, I'm worried the rest of the world could get ahead of us on that. And when Peter Thiel said that, you know, that China could use it as a weapon to debase the dollar, I'm just worried about them technologically getting ahead of us in what becomes maybe the system that people use, more than just undermining. We're undermining the dollar pretty well ourselves, I think. That guy that we were just showing.
That would have been a very good answer, or even a unique or interesting answer had Powell given it, meaning given Peter Thiel's answer or whatnot. Let's talk time off. Companies adding incentives now to encourage workers to use their vacation. PwC offering employees $250 for every full week of vacation they book, up to $1,000 a year. The plan could cost the firm millions, but PwC tells the Wall Street Journal it's exhausted other attempts to get people to disconnect from the office. Joe, I hope our minders are watching this, because I'd like to be paid to take some time off. The issue, though, and I hate to be cynical about it, a lot of companies are attempting to push people to take time off. It's not just that they want their employees to disconnect because they're going to feel better and do better work and be more efficient, all that later. It's that there are some legal issues around whether vacation time actually should be considered comp, and whether companies will have to comp people who don't take that vacation time for that time. And so $250 a week may actually prove to be a much cheaper way, this is why I said cynical, to get people to take vacation than to actually pay them for the time that they're working.
Well, we're in some unique times in terms of vacations right now, and both of us have, you know, I've canceled, I don't know how many vacations in the last year.
Yes.
I've canceled many vacations. And
we're owed lots of vacation time, Joe.
And for us, like, we're so essential. I mean, for us to be able to get a week off is so, I mean, you'd think, I mean, sometimes we try, and I guess I feel good about it because it really is hard to get time off. Then you throw in the kids and varying what times that they have off and other stuff that they're doing. And it's got to be a perfect storm to get a week where you can get it off and all the kids can go and you can get the accommodations and there's no quarantining coming back. And it's just been a lot of concerns, but it's a benefit, a huge benefit. And if you did put it in dollar terms, I think it would scare companies on, you know, that's why they do want people to take those, because it would be a big liability, I think.
That's the issue. So hopefully we're going to take a lot of time off maybe this summer. What do you think, Joe?
I've got some plans, but you know what they say about the best laid plans. You never know.
Next on Squawk Pod, imagine a 100-person Zoom. Now imagine a Zoom with 100 CEOs discussing access to voting. Management expert Jeff Sonnenfeld helped organize one, and he learned that America's leaders will not stay silent.
You talk about taxation with representation. They don't mind taking the business leaders' money, but they don't want their voice. These business leaders that were there, but they don't like being told to give us your money and shut up.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
You're listening to Squawk Pod.
And welcome back to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Joe Kernan, along with Andrew Ross Sorkin. Becky's off today. Becky's doing her civic duty, taking some time off, which we now know is actually being, you know, promoted some places. You can actually get paid for it. I don't think we're going to get paid here for that, Andrew, from what I can tell from the initial response. But that's okay. Just getting the time off would be good, I think, right? It's Monday. You know, Monday.
And we should say, we do get paid. We get paid off vacation, which is very different
we don't
than
get
a lot
paid
of people
to take
who are contract workers or freelance workers who don't get paid at all. When they take vacation, it's on them and it costs them.
But they can take it whenever they want, though, too, right? They could get 8 weeks.
Benefit there, too.
Right. So. Right. I'm not complaining. It's been tough with COVID. It's been tough. It's been tough to arrange vacations, fly.
That is true. But there's a lot of folks out there who'd be dying, frankly, to have a job right now. We got some other news to tell our viewers about because so much happened over the weekend. One of the other things that happened was a group of CEOs and other top executives met on a Zoom over the weekend to brainstorm what they want to do next about voting laws in Georgia. And others underway in Texas and now other states. Former American Express CEO Ken Chenault, Merck CEO Ken Frazier addressed the group, urging business leaders across the country to call for greater voting access. And Yale's Jeff Sonnenfeld helped organize that gathering. He's going to join us to tell us what took place and talk about what happens next. But lots of CEOs taking their Saturday off to work on this very important issue that a lot of folks are talking about, debating. Controversial, but nonetheless, we will discuss that with Jeff in the second.
Yeah, I don't know what $13 million a year equates to as far as a hourly wage, but I'd join that Zoom meeting for a couple of hours for, you know, $8,000 an hour or whatever. There's more than that.
I'm not sure they're being paid for that, Joe.
They didn't clock in for that, but that's what a CEO makes. So, you know, anything that they ask me to do, I'm willing to do it for $13 million a year.
They don't have to do this, though.
They don't have to do it. But if you're a CEO, you might, I do whatever's involved. Sign me up. I'm good for it. I'll come in on Sundays.
Joining us right now is one of the people who organized that call, Jeff Sonnenfeld, Senior Associate Dean for Leadership Studies at Yale Schools of Management and a CNBC contributor. Jeff, it's great to see you, and I appreciate you taking on this important issue. But I'm hoping you can talk to the viewers this morning, especially those CEOs who were not, for example, on your call, and get at this issue of, I know you believe this is a nonpartisan issue, but part of this discussion, frankly, is about the 43 states that are pursuing laws virtually all, but I say virtually, I should say all by Republicans. And I think that for a lot of viewers, especially who are Republicans, they have concerns about this being a partisan issue.
It's not a partisan issue. It's an issue of democracy. Is not a left or right or Democrat or Republican issue in democracy versus denial of voice. And that's what the CEOs are telling us. The morning consult data, which we had originally commissioned for this, that was overnight callings from around the country, interviews, showed overwhelming majorities of Republicans concerned about denial of voter access in this legislation, as well as Democrats. And Andrew, I'm sorry to say that the Brennan Center for Justice, who was at our event, Michael Waldman, the head of it, pointed out that it's actually up to 47 states with 331 initiatives. And overwhelmingly, our CEOs, as well as the American public, reads these voter restrictions as voter suppression.
And so what do you believe the role of business should be in this context? Because, as you know, and we've talked about it for many years, business tried to stay out of all of these types of issues. You had Mitch McConnell effectively say to the CEO community, stay out of this.
Yeah, and this is a strong bark back from the business community. You talk about taxation with representation. They don't like take They don't mind taking the business leader's money, but they don't want their voice. These people are saying quite strongly, this is a defiance of that statement, a collective defiance. They don't all agree with each other, by the way. As you know, the group was 65-70% Republican, these business leaders that were there, but they don't like being told to give us your money and shut up. They have voice, and it matters, and the American public wants to hear it. As we know, if you take out the military, which is not allowed to speak, tragically, it's not your line of work or my line of work, academia or media, or certainly not elected officials at state or local levels or federal levels, or the clergy that are the most trusted pillars of American society. Right now, it's business leaders. It wasn't in 2007, sadly, as we know, but it is now, and they're stepping up to the plate. They hear that. And speaking up to the plate, we're taking a look, of course, even at the major league teams. We talked about that. We had Arthur Blank with us there as co-founder of the Home Depot, talking about how the NFL has been watching what Major League Baseball is doing, right, trying to understand what players tell them where they don't feel comfortable. That has a loud ripple effect. So these CEOs are talking about a whole host of options. Some are interested in the federal legislation to have blue states and red states held to the same playing field, the same ground rules. Others are talking about where they put their money, whether or not it has to do with cutting.
How skeptical, though, should viewers and the public be about the role of business in this? And I ask for the following reason. It's one thing to put your name next to a statement, right? And there's a lot of people who've been willing to sign lots of statements. It's another thing to actually do something with your operations and with your money. And there were a number of companies after the insurrection that took place on January 6th who said they were not going to continue funding through PACs and otherwise some of the politicians who were involved with supporting what has now been called the big lie. And yet some of those same companies have since gone back on that promise and have continued to support with their money some of those same politicians. You're already seeing it. We had, after the murder of Khashoggi, you had a group of CEOs say, well, we're not going to go to Saudi Arabia. 2 years later, we're going to go to Saudi Arabia. So how much does it really matter?
You initiated that blowback, that backlash against the Davos in the desert, Andrew. You deserve a lot of credit for that. And the backsliding, I think, was disappointing in that matter. In this matter, I've looked pretty closely at it. The CEOs who were coming to our early crisis calls, our pop-up conferences, if you will, were 40 at a time, were the major CEOs. They were saying universally, in fact, unanimously, they were going to curtail their spending and campaign spending. But they were self-selected group. You take a look at the conference board surveys of the larger group, it was half. And that's still the right number, half of them still holding up. And in terms of people looking at the actual payment, it's time lag data. They haven't seen what's going to be spent for 2022. They're still looking at the old data. So I think a fair number of that will hold. If you look at the surveys now, it's still 70, it's only fallen by about maybe not even a quarter that are still holding their ground on curtailing their payments. And we're seeing actual companies that have put on hold large investments of moving plant equipment and personnel into some of these states in question where their employees don't feel comfortable. This has already happened. We also see people like Brad Karp, to name a name, the managing partner of Paul Weiss, bonding together 60 of the nation's top 100 law firms. And I think you'll have all top 100 probably soon. But we're ready right now today to dispatch SWAT teams to go to these 47 states with election law experts to help battle back any of these restrictions. It's the CEOs aren't doing this for grandiosity. You're right. They hate playing politician. They don't want to get involved. There's no middle ground anymore. Their silence means acquiescence. It means agreement. And they don't want that. So what they want to do is they want a harmonious society. They don't like politicians using these wedge issues for self-gain. They want people to not have finger-pointing workforces. They don't want angry communities. They don't want hostile shareholders. This is a win-win.
But Jeff, the complicated part is the same politicians who are pushing some of these laws, which you're saying they're objecting to, are the same politicians who are also going to fight, I imagine, on behalf of corporations when it comes to lower taxes, for example.
These CEOs, as you're hearing them more and more, say they'll pay a couple of dollars more on taxes. We're seeing the business community is asserting themselves with a certain kind of gangly adolescence, a redefining of their identity, that they're not going to be defined by any business, any political party. A couple of dollars on taxes, these people are not xenophobes. They're not anti-immigration. They've had to fight the Republican Party on H-1B visa issues and had to threaten to open up satellite facilities, as you know, in Vancouver and Toronto. to go in the White House and tell them so last summer if they don't get and open up and have the free flow of top talent into the country. It felt the same way on gun safety. Several hundred companies bypassed the political process to cut ties with the NRA, whether or not it was on these ridiculous bathroom bills. These were hallmark bedrock companies from AT&T, Walmart, UPS. It wasn't just sort of the quote unquote progressive companies, whether it was Nike or Patagonia, which are fine companies, or Starbucks, and Apple. It was all these other companies, too. It's gotten to the point, it's sort of like where you wouldn't remember this. In 1973, when Johnny Carson said it was time for Nixon to step down, the country moved. This is coming from the center of the company. These are not radical fringe people. These are very centrist, very serious business players saying it's time to stop the nonsense. We don't want a divided nation. We don't want divided communities. We don't want angry workforces. Let's get back to business. And that's what they want to do here. And they're curious about it. And they're cutting their own path. Sure, they don't like some things Democrats do. But they're certainly not going to be defined by the Republicans either. And a couple more on dollars has nothing. They're not protectionist. They're not isolationist.
Jeffrey,
they're not xenophobes.
We appreciate it very, very much. It's great to see you. And we do hope to have you back to continue this conversation because it's an issue that isn't going away. Talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Next on Squawk Pod, Dr. Scott Gottlieb on the light and life at the end of this pandemic tunnel.
I'm hopeful by May this won't be the dominant news story. The only question is I don't know what's going to displace it, but I think that things are going to get better very quickly around the country.
We'll be right back.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
This is Squawk Pod from CNBC. Here's Joe Kernan.
A new study out of Israel says the South African variant of the coronavirus may be able to evade some protection of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. While it has yet to be peer-reviewed, researchers at the largest healthcare organization in Israel found data that suggests that the variant is able, in certain instances, to break through the protection of the vaccine more so than the original strain of COVID. Joining us now, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, former FDA commissioner and a CNBC contributor. He also serves on the boards of Pfizer and Illumina. Also, his latest op-ed in the Wall Street Journal makes the case for so-called vaccine passports, which you've made the case for on this show before as more, maybe not necessarily as preventing people from doing things, but enabling people in a fast lane type situation to go visit someone in a hospital or a nursing home or something like that.
That's right. I mean, the challenge with the question around these so-called vaccine passports is that people right now don't own the information verifying that they've been vaccinated. They don't have a digitally verifiable, cryptographically signed application or even document, even a QR code that can demonstrate that they've been vaccinated. We've got these cards that people received when they got vaccinated, but that's not going to be good enough. Those are available on eBay right now. You can get those cards. So people aren't going to accept the cards as proof of vaccination. What happened when this system was set up was that the federal government was scrambling for a way to keep track of who was getting vaccinated. So they required the states to report the information to these 64 jurisdictions that exist in the country, basically to track pediatric vaccinations. So when states vaccinate a child, that information has to be reported to one of these 64 jurisdictions. Most of them fall around states, but some states have two, like Texas, and some cities are their own jurisdiction, like New York. The system was set up so that pediatricians can query these jurisdictions to find out if a child has already received their vaccination schedule. All the information about COVID vaccinations was put in the same system. The problem with the system is it was never designed really to be accessible to consumers. So consumers really have no way right now to get the information to prove they've been vaccinated. And there are going to be circumstances that exist in the future that are going to require us to prove we've been vaccinated. I believe that as the epidemic gets worse next winter, right now this winter, nursing homes ban visitors, hospitals ban visitors. You could see a situation where those institutions might allow people to visit if they can demonstrate they've been vaccinated, but it's going to be hard to demonstrate that proof. So I think that the applications that we're talking about, and it may be something as simple as allowing Apple Health Vault to pull down this information from these 64 jurisdictions, that's going to be necessary in certain limited circumstances next year. So I think people need to think about this differently. Right now, as consumers, we don't own this information, and we should.
Right. and we have the technology, it wouldn't be that difficult either, right, Doctor?
That's right. And some states need to pass separate legislation to allow this information to be accessible. So states are going to have to make a decision to do that. We see some states potentially passing legislation to prevent this information from being accessible because the whole discussion around vaccine passports has gotten swept up in a lot of concerns around whether or not it's going to be used to limit people's access to things that they would otherwise do. I think the use case for this information is likely to be enabling access to things that are otherwise going to be restricted,
right,
like the nursing home example. So, you know, we need to think differently about this. I think consumers should be empowered with this information. How they choose to use it is up to them.
So you're probably not totally shocked that some of these variants, I think we already had an idea that the vaccine wasn't as effective. Should we assume that the Moderna vaccine, which is so similar, it's a different epitope, but you think the South African vaccine variant can get around that one as well?
Well, I think we should assume that the mRNA vaccines behave in a similar fashion. They so far have from the clinical research that we've seen. This study that you're talking about involved the Pfizer vaccine. I'm on the board of Pfizer, of course, and it was real-world evidence derived from Israel. But the study didn't say, I think, what some people are interpreting. What happened was they looked at people who had been vaccinated and who had become subsequently infected, and it was a small data set. I believe it was only 8 patients who had the 1351 variant. But what they found was, compared to some controls or some matched controls, a higher proportion of people who had been vaccinated who subsequently got infected with the 1351 variant. It didn't appear they got very sick in the study. They just got infected with that variant. So
right.
I think it's intuitive that if someone who's vaccinated is going to get infected, it's more likely to be with one of the variants. That's the best you can conclude here. Also, one other key point which was left out of the analysis is that everyone who got the 1351 variant who had been vaccinated got the variant before they were fully vaccinated. So the infection had occurred before 14 days after their second injection. Nobody got infected with 131 after 14 days.
Do you think there'll be a day when I'm not saying we'll have the latest COVID headlines? I'm sick of it's very sad and frustrating. Will there be a day where there aren't the latest COVID headlines, Doctor, or not?
I'm hopeful by May this won't be the dominant news story. The only question is I don't know what's going to displace it, but I think that things are going to get better very quickly around the country.
We'll find something. Maybe it'll be, you know, the Masters winner or something that we like to talk about. Thanks, Doctor. We got the charging stations in the infrastructure plan, but you didn't see Waffle House anywhere on that, did you? You think Biden, the administration, has heard my idea? I mean, it takes about 35 minutes to charge the car. What are you going to do for that 35 minutes? Or IHOP? Don't you see that? Do you see what I'm saying? Do you not see the synergies there?
A nice waffle would be helpful. I don't disagree. I think.
What do you do for the 35 minutes? You don't want to walk around like a 7-Eleven looking at those crummy old hot dogs or something? I mean,
Chipotle, you know, we've talked about how much we both love a burrito.
Chipotle takes about 35 minutes these days. They're so popular to try and. I'm a believer in Chipotle. That's a good idea.
Okay.
I don't know. It seems, you know, that's the kind of infrastructure I can get behind, Sorkin.
Little Chipotle or Taco Bell, a little faster over there.
Oh, be still, right. My beating
now,
heart.
I know what you like.
And that's Squawk Pod for today. Thanks for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern. Follow us on Twitter at SquawkCNBC and send us your thoughts, feedback.
I think I mumble. People on Twitter are right. I'm a mumbler.
To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, hey, that's what this podcast is for. Subscribe to and share Squawk Pod, and we'll meet you back here tomorrow.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.